You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 682. With computers and technology, we're becoming more and more secluded from each other. Wolfgang Peterson, rest in peace.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's filmbizbook.com. Enjoy today's episode with guest host Dave Bullis.
This guy is the founder and president of Troma Entertainment and the creator of The Toxic Avenger. I'm sure you already know who the guest is without me even saying his name, but with guest Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, hi Dave. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, Lloyd. And
you know, one of my daughters, the mutant middle child, one of the mutants in Romeo and Juliet, she started a company called Kit Split, which is an Airbnb for film gear, for film equipment, film and video equipment. Kit Split, K-I-T, K as in Kaufman, IT.com. Her partner is named Christina, and guess what the last name is?
Kaufman?
Budelis.
Ah.
So Lisbeth Kaufman is my daughter, but her partner is Christina Budelis. Kitsplit.com. We use it. It's great. It's if you own a camera and you're not using it, Troma might need a camera and can rent it from you through Kitsplit, get very cheap, inexpensive insurance, and get a price that's probably 20% of the exorbitant equipment houses. So Kitsplit.com is Hearst Media is one of their major investors, and they're in both the East Coast and the West Coast.
And you know, Lloyd, I'll not only link to that in the show notes, but I wanted to ask you also about independent film and, you know, just how everything has changed even, you know, since we last talked. You know, unfortunately, George A. Romero, he's passed away. Net neutrality has sort of passed away. So it's just a shame, you know.
Yeah.
But so I wanted to ask you, Lloyd,
I would like to pass away myself, quite frankly. I don't have the nerve to make an appointment with the business end of a shotgun. I'm a little scared of pain.
You know, Lloyd, I could only imagine what the eulogies would be at your funeral. I mean, I could just imagine there. It would actually be a line bigger than the Apple Store or Starbucks. I'm serious. I mean, you have always been a rock star of indie film, and I wanted to ask, you know, what do you think of the current state of independent, you know, filmmaking? I mean, you just touched upon the rental houses. You know, have things gotten a little better? Have they gotten a little worse?
Well, it only gets worse, at least for Troma. The problem is, as you know, the democratic revolution of movies means that everybody can make a movie and you don't really need money anymore. You know, you can make it on your phone, as you know, it's broadcast quality. And young people today have mastered the thousands of people making movies. And out of 1,000 movies, they're going to have a few masterpieces. The problem is you can't live off your art. You can't pay the rent or eat. And that is because the giant telephone and the movie, the media conglomerates, now AT&T owns Time Warner, you know, that kind of stuff. They control all the sources of revenue. So, and they want to own, and the laws have changed, so they now can own all the sources of revenue. It used to be that the television networks were not allowed to own the content, but now they can own it, and they want to own it. So that is why Netflix is spending $8 billion on their own damn, they're making their own damn movies and TV shows. And, you know, there's only about seven big companies that control all the media. So it gets more and more difficult for Troma and for any independent filmmaker. But the good news is that you, young people, can make movies for nothing. I can't because I don't know how to do it. I'm stuck in the celluloid age, so I can only make $500,000 movies, which that model does not work. It used to, but not anymore. So this one I'm going to do, Shakespeare's Shitstorm, our version of The Tempest, of Shakespeare's Tempest. That's bound to be the last one because my wife and I have to put up the money, and I can't imagine we can keep putting up $500,000. So this will be, I mean, Return to Newcomb High, a.k.a. Volume 2, Troma, and our fans helped us on Kickstarter. We paid for it. The next one, though, Troma's has no money, so my wife, the commissioner, and I will have to fund the movie.
You know, I actually helped back Return to Newcomb High Volume 2 on Kickstarter, Lloyd.
Yes, you did. I remember that. And thank you so much. You gave us $15,000, and I'm eternally grateful to you. It was very generous.
My pleasure. I actually found the money in the old burlap sack behind a 7-Eleven.
Yep. That was, once you took the severed head out of it, there was all that money. And thank you for giving it to help us. But our fans really raised about $80,000 for the budget of Return to Newcomb High, a.k.a. Volume 2. We had run out of money, and we had money coming in later, but we had a time where we either would have had to stop and lay people off in the editing department, but the fans came to the rescue and got us over the hump, and then we were able to pay for the rest of the movie. So it's about $400,000 maybe. So the fans gave us 20% of the budget. So it was pretty damn nice.
So as we talk about independent cinema, Lloyd, and we talk about Return to Newcomb High Volume 2. So where does the impetus for you? When do you decide what movie you're going to make? And, when do you start actually starting to write, you start to write the script and you actually start to get the money for this, where does that impetus sort of start from?
Usually it's born in the current events of the day. McDonald's moved next to the Troma building. There was a McDonald's that moved in next to our building in New York, in Hell's Kitchen, 9th Avenue in Manhattan. And they were horrible neighbors. They damaged our building, and they brought rats the size of raccoons, and it got me into reading Fast Food Nation and starting to think a bit about the disgrace that is called fast food, and how McDonald's tortures the animals, exploits the workers, makes shit food that causes prepubescent teenagers to get obese. There's nothing good about it. And, of course, the McDonald's architecture is disgusting to look at. There's nothing good about it whatsoever. So that led me to want to make a movie about that issue. And I'm a big lover of Broadway musicals. And I had always wanted to make a musical. And Gabe Friedman, who was our editor for 10 years, our main editor for 10 years, he suggested make it into a musical. And he pretty much wrote Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, or we wrote it together. But he really was the driving force. And he, in fact, I think he's the one who gave me Fast Food Nation to read.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
And the movie, of course, Fast Food Nation, didn't appeal to anybody but the small number of yuppies who read the book, so the movie was pretty boring. Whereas Poultrygeist is aimed at the younger generations who can change the world, and maybe, and in fact, McDonald's has, I think, cleaned up its act a little bit. I think they're, you know, raised their minimum wage a little, and I believe they're trying to emphasize salads and healthier food. At least I hope they are.
Yeah, I haven't been to McDonald's in quite a long time, so I haven't really, I don't really know the menu too well. Except for the only time I would go there is to maybe eat breakfast or something like that really quickly. You know, you kind of like, you know, in a rush, and you just kind of go in there to grab something, and then you eat it, and you go, oh, I'm sorry, I ate that.
Again, just because it's fast food doesn't mean it can't be good. You know, I mean, it's nothing wrong with salad, nothing wrong with the. You know, protein, but to make this fatty, disgusting. And they, of course, the animals are tortured, and that's where Poultrygeist came from. In the case of Return to Nukemai, a.k.a. Volume 2, that's the second half of my big event movie, Return to Nukemai, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And the themes there were they also concerned food and the fact that our high schools have been serving crap food, so they've contributed to the very bad health of the American teenagers, and you know we have a huge problem with obesity, and also the bullying is a big theme of Return to Nukem High, and of course it's a lesbianic love story, and Sugar Cookies in 1971 was a lesbian Vertigo. It was based on Hitchcock's Vertigo. So we've always been sort of rooting for the underdog, and Return to Nukem High Volume 1 and 2 deal with the underdog who gets bullied for being in the LGBTQ department.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, it's kind of like Trauma, right, Lloyd? You know, it's the underdog always fighting for the little guy, trying not to get smushed by, you know, the corporate giants.
Trying to fight back.
Yeah.
Doing everything one can to change the world, make the world a better place every little bit, to be part of the actions and passions of his or her times, as Oliver Wendell Holmes stated back in the day. The old days. Supreme Court justice. Very right wing, though.
And because, you know, as we sort of talk about, you know, Return to Nukem High Volume 2, I know, you know, once you finally got everything together, you know, and you were able to start the Kickstarter and it was successful, you know, you were able to start shooting. You know, what were some of the challenges of making a film, you know, making an independent film nowadays? So what were some of the big challenges that you came across while making the movie?
The biggest challenge we have is we make $20 million movies for $350,000 to $500,000. And you know Trent Haker, right? You know him?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote Citizen Toxie. He just has a wonderful movie out called 68 Kill. And when we were writing Citizen Toxie, we had an investor who was going to put up, I think, $2 million for Citizen Toxie. And we wrote it for that budget. And then the investor disappeared, and we had to make the movie for about $500,000. And we did not change the script. We made the script that Trent wrote. And Trent was extremely – in fact, he's in – I interviewed him in one of my books. And he devotes a fair amount of the interview with how happy he was that we didn't cut anything out of the script due to budget. We figured out ways to do everything that was in – Citizen Toxie, $2 million script. We figured out how to make that movie for $400,000, and he was very, very happy with that. But that is the most daunting part of it. This movie we're about to make, Shakespeare's Shitstorm, which is a version of The Tempest, it is huge. It's a huge, you know, thousands. Well, it's like Return to Nukem High Volume 2. It's enormous cast, special effects. Costuming, transformations, explosions, people, High Falls, People on Fire. I mean, it's a $20 million movie made for under half a million. Well, probably volume two, I think, was 350 to maybe 400,000, somewhere in that zone. But we won't make, if it's as low as it is, we will lose it all because we're denied access to the revenue streams.
Well, and I know you're having a lot of premieres. You're sort of touring the film,
yes.
And you have some of the and I saw some of the screenings on the website for the film. But also, I had Dave Kempfield, our mutual friend Dave Kempfield, on the podcast, and he was obviously he does the Troma Now podcast. So you started your own streaming service, by the way, Lloyd, which is a great idea in my opinion, because I think that's where everything is going. So everyone's going to have their own content that's theirs, and just sort of go from there. So how has Troma Now has that sort of come to what you wanted it to be? As has you ever had a good response from that?
Troma Now is great. The problem is nobody knows about it, and we have no money to advertise. We have no money, period. But we certainly don't have money to advertise. So it's all word of mouth, and it's terrific. In fact, Return to Nukem High Volume 1, the first half of this event film, is premiering on Troma Now at this very minute. And every month we have two or three premiere movies, world premieres. And then I curate about a dozen movies from our library, some of which are classics or sometimes there's a theme. It's a great service, and it's only $4.99 a month, and it keeps Troma alive. We're bust. We're living on the memory of fumes. We're not living on fumes. We're living on the memory of fumes. And without our fans going on Troma Now, I don't know how. And shopping at our studio store, Troma Direct. Troma Direct is our store on Troma.com. Our fans are the only reason we're still around. They support us and they subscribe to Troma Now. And anybody out there who's listening, if you want to support new, brilliant, independent filmmakers, the next generation of James Gunn's and the other famous directors who have come out of the loins of Troma, Eli Roth, Trent Haga, and actors like Samuel Jackson and so on and so forth, support Troma Now and support the new filmmakers whose movies are premiering on Troma Now. It's a great, great system. It's only $4.99 a month. First month is free. But even if it isn't free, pay the $4.99. We're the last independent movie studio. We're the last ones. And we're certainly it's our 44th year, and it's never been more difficult. And we're the last ones who even pay lip service to true independent filmmaking. There are no studios left who have any longevity. And the ones, one or two that do have longevity, it's all about money. There is no idealism or love of the art or... it's all about who's in the movie and the packaging and the huge advertising campaigns. We're the last one. Troma Entertainment is the last one, and it's all thanks to our fans. We wouldn't be here without our fans. And net neutrality helps us too. The free, open, and diverse internet, which unfortunately FCC, the Federal Communications Commission's director, Ajit Pai is his name. Pai was his last name. So for shit Pai, he's decided to get rid of net neutrality. So that means the main conglomerates, now AT&T, Comcast, these aren't even, they're not even involved in the arts. They're phone companies, ISPs. But the point is, they want to build a superhighway that they will be able to afford to pay for and be on, but we will not be able to afford to be able to put our content on the superhighway. So no longer will everybody be equal. There will be an elite of rich people. It'll be a CBS, NBC, ABC world. You'll have the homogenized baby food of the major conglomerates on this superhighway and their vassals. And then all the innovation and all the new people and all the brilliant James Gunns and Eli Roths of the future will be on this dirt road, the internet that will be a dirt road. And
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
Take a long time to buffer, and they'll slow us down and speed themselves up. You know, it'll be over. Be over. And there won't be any more innovation. You know, where did Kickstarter come from? Came from net neutrality on the internet. It's a free, open, and diverse internet, democratic medium. Troma has 500,000 people every month coming to my fan site and Troma's website and store and Twitter and Facebook and at Lloyd Kaufman on Instagram. You know, we have literally maybe more than 500,000 every month because they like it. And we have just as much opportunity on the internet as Disney. If they like Disney, they go to Disney. If they like Troma, they go to Troma. But everybody's equal. It's a level playing field. But if there's a superhighway that's fast, that you can get, that delivers fast broadcasting to the consumer, and then Troma's on the dirt road that takes a long time to buffer, nobody's gonna want to waste their time. It'll be like public access TV. People are going to want to go where the good quality broadcasting is, and that's going to be on the superhighway, and we will not be allowed to be on it, mainly because we won't be able to afford to be on it. So I imagine we'll be done if indeed the free, open, and diverse internet goes away. But never mind Troma. Troma is just a movie company. There are going to be cures for cancer. There are all these wonderful things that come out of the free, open, and diverse net neutrality that simply won't happen. The innovators are going to have to go through. If you have a toothpaste that can prevent cavities, really prevent cavities, you won't be able to go direct to your audience, right? The angry video game nerd gets millions and millions of views and makes money from the net neutrality internet. But and maybe he will be able to afford to be on the superhighway. But the YouTube stars of the future, you know, new, young, first-time YouTube stars who, under normal net neutrality conditions, might be able to attract millions of people because they've got something that the public likes, something new and different and that might change the world a little bit, they won't be able – they'll have to go through one of the majors or the vassals of the majors, the toothpaste, the guy who invents toothpaste, gal or guy who invents toothpaste. Real cavity preventing toothpaste, they'll have to go through Colgate or Palmer or the other one, Procter and Gamble, and they won't be permitted to make very much money. They'll get the tiny, you know how it is, right? If you own, and there'll be a lot of innovation that won't happen because nobody will know about it, or that the gatekeepers in the cartel and the monopolies won't have the imagination. Do you think that the monopoly, the cartel, do you think that they would have understood how great Kickstarter could be? Right? Kickstarter started with nothing. Nothing.
Yeah.
Right? It grew because the public wanted it. It was a need for it. But the establishment wouldn't understand that. They're not going to – they certainly don't want competition. Netflix wouldn't be here without net neutrality. Now they're part of the elite and they're part of the – they're probably going to close the gate. They'll probably close the gate and now that they're inside the treasure house, they'll probably bar us from, they'll probably go against net neutrality. Google, I think, is for net neutrality. And I think Facebook is, too. So that's good.
Yeah, that's actually something to hear because you think they'd also be against it. But, you know, that's why I want to have you on here, Lloyd, because, again, you're fighting for the small guy. You know, like when people ask me, how do you promote a podcast? And I go, I have no clue. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. So, but that's why I have people on like you, Lloyd, because you're out there fighting the good fight.
Well, you have a good podcast and you've done 75 or more chapters, episodes. And obviously, whatever you're doing, because of net neutrality and the democratic level playing field of net neutrality, you're able to attract viewers. If your podcast were not interesting to people, you'd be gone.
Well, right? Thank you, Lloyd. I appreciate that. By the way, your episode, this episode we're recording right now, is going to be episode 205.
Wow!
Can you believe it?
That's great. When will it air?
It's going to air next week.
Great.
So it'll be plenty of time to, you know, for everyone to hear about the premiere and everything. But
that
you know,
would be great.
You know, I saw a video of you, by the way, Lloyd. I know we're starting to run out of time, but I saw a video of you, and it was called it was called Lloyd Kaufman Bothers People at Yoga Hose's premiere. So I have to ask, you know,
it was called Lloyd Kaufman Bothers
Kevin Smith and at Yoga. it was funny. It was good, all good stuff, and I just wanted to ask, doing grassroots campaigns like that, you know, I've wanted to have Kevin on this podcast. He seems like such a good guy. Is he a good guy in person, Lloyd?
I don't know him well. I certainly admire him, and he's certainly one of our greats. But I can tell you there's a show that he has called Comic Book Men, and they have a episode coming up in the fall, I think, with it's a trauma for one of their episodes where we're all there, and it's terrific. It's very funny, and how nice of Ming and Brian Johnson and Kevin Smith. You know, they were nice to devote an episode to Trauma Entertainment, Toxie and Kabuki Man, and I and I think Catherine Cochran and Elizabeth D'Ambrosio. You know, we had a Trauma episode. Very. I can't talk too much about it because I've been pledged to. Confidentiality, you know, they don't want me to be a spoiler, obviously, but yeah. It's a very funny. They did a great job. It's hilarious. So keep an eye out for Comic Book Men and the Trauma. You know, so how nice is Kevin Smith to allow a Trauma episode? You know?
Well, and speaking of that, Lloyd, too, you know, you mentioned Toxie. I don't know if you could actually talk about this, but one question I wanted to really ask you is, you know, I know there was a talk about a remake, there was actually going to be a remake of the Toxic Avenger. Is there any more news about that?
Well, they've got Conrad Vernon as the director, and he is great. He loves Trauma. He did Sausage Party. He did Shrek. He loves movies. He's one of the unique establishment people who actually love movies and are in it for the art, not for the scum-soaked red carpet rape culture. So he's a good guy, and you can have a conversation with him. He knows film history, and he's going to do a great job. I'm not confident that the movie ever is I think their deal runs out in May, so far they've not put it together. Akiva Goldsman, who was the big shot on the case, it's been about 10 years, and I think they have not been able to make it happen.
Because
they got a few more months to run, and I think it's going to take a miracle.
Because at some point, John Travolta was attached to it, right?
They had John Travolta. They had what's his name? The pumping iron guy. Was
Arnold.
The governor. Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He signed. He signed. Apparently, they announced it at the Cannes Film Festival years ago, and then he quickly unsigned for some. Well, he unsigned because he got offered a $60 million remake. He was getting $60 million for a remake of something. One of his, maybe it was the Terminator, whatever it was shite. But unfortunately, that was it. So far, they've come up with nothing. They have Conrad Vernon. He's great. But I think, I don't think it's going to happen.
That's a shame.
If it happened, we would have gotten a big check.
Yeah.
They've got till May, so... If it goes, we get a big check, and then we can make not only can we make Shakespeare's Shitstorm, which we are making, but we would be able to make the fifth Toxic Avenger Part 5, Grime and Punishment, which takes place in Chernobyl, but we don't have the $800,000 to make Toxic 5, so I don't think that will get made. I think Shakespeare's Shitstorm might well be my last, if I get through it, if we actually make it this summer. It's a very daunting task. Like all movies, Shakespeare's Shitstorm is a $20 million movie being made for $300,000 or $400,000. So it's a hell of a project. So that may well be the end of it, because I can't keep putting up my wife and my money to make movies. And
we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Where the major media and, you know, the major media not only doesn't give us any outlet for revenue, but doesn't even cover us after 50 years of making movies. You know, I've been doing this for 50 years, and New York Times the word trauma has not been in the New York Times or any newspaper for, you know, 25 years. We had our 40th year a couple of years, you know, 4 years ago. No New York media covered it, not a word. No Hollywood Reporter, no Variety. You know, there hasn't been an independent movie studio that has existed for 44 years. There hasn't been one in history that's done what we've done and left such a mark on the cultural map, right? Look at all the directors from James Gunn to Eli Roth to the guys who did Deadpool, to Takashi Miike, to the guy who did the Stillness of the whatever it is of water, Del Toro, right? They all love trauma. Peter Jackson is a trauma fan. Hayao Miyazaki, the guy who did My Neighbor Totoro, is a huge fan, right? The Deadpool guys talk more. They talk about, right? You can see their influence of trauma there. Yet, the fact that we lived for 30 years, survived for 30 years, totally independently, with no, you know, we don't make movies for Lifetime, which is a division of one of those conglomerates. We're totally on our own. No interest, because we don't have the money to advertise. So the New York Times has no interest in us, nor does the New York Post, nor do any of the media. The only reason they're interested is when there's some advertising, right? For Variety, if you take a page in Variety of advertising, they might give you, if you're independent, you might get a little article, you know, about what you're doing at the Cannes Film Festival. Same with Hollywood Reporter. But apparently, we are not anything. We don't exist. We do not exist. Return to Newcomb High, Volume 2. Return to Newcomb High, a.k.a. Volume 2. It doesn't exist. It doesn't matter that Lloyd Kaufman's been has 50 years of experience making movies like The Toxic Avenger or Class of Newcomb High or Squeeze Play, Waitress, First Turn On, movies that have clearly influenced a huge segment of our mainstream talent and have brought forth Samuel Jackson. Oliver Stone got into this industry because of me. I mean, there are tons of people who wouldn't be around or who are heavily influenced by the trauma oeuvre, yet nobody cares. Nothing. We don't exist. We do not exist, and it's especially damning in New York, where we've we own a building, we got the payroll, we've made movies in New York State for 50, at least I have, for 50 years, and the fucking bastards don't even acknowledge that we exist. The critics review us, and they give us very good review. And the Museum of Modern Art is premiering Return to Newcomb High, and the Museum of the Moving Image here premiered Return to Newcomb High, a.k.a. Volume 2. But only the critics of the Times or the Post or whatever they pay attention. They review the movie. But again, when they review the movie, they stick, it's usually stuck in the ghetto of where the guy is making a documentary about a left-handed mattress worker or, you know, some kid who's made his first horror film and, but it's politically correct kind of person, but that's, you know, that's called, you know, they stick it in this section. It's like a ghetto, and the people reading the paper of the New York Times, you know, they don't even read that section.
Yeah, you know, and that's why, again, Lloyd, I wanted to have you on. I think it's so important to support trauma because you actually released one of my favorite movies of all time, which is Cannibal the Musical, which is Trey Parker, Matt Stone. You know, they for everyone listening, in case you don't know that name, those names, they do South Park.
We discovered them and helped them make Cannibal the Musical. We distributed it. Nobody else would. Nobody. We helped them finish it, and you'll see the opening of Cannibal the Musical is a very trauma-ish, and the rest of the movie is in much better taste. And it's a brilliant film, but they were able to use the VHS box to help them get credibility. So when they were pitching South Park and all that stuff, gave them a little bit of professional air. And I'm in some of their early, I'm in Orgasmo, and they're great guys. They're terrific. They're wonderful. They're great. They were great. But that's only another example of why, I mean, there's an avalanche of people that have come out of trauma. It's unbelievable how we are totally ignored. I still can't get over it. And then the thing that really pisses me off, David, is, and I'm grateful. James Gunn gave me 2 seconds in his wonderful Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a masterpiece. That's a beautiful film. And I have a 2 second shot. So all the recognition, I've gotten more recognition for my 2 seconds in Guardians of the Galaxy than for my 50 years of, killing myself to make Poultrygeist, Night of the Chicken Dead, or Troma's War, or Terra Firma. You know, it takes me about 5 years to make a movie. Return to Nukem High and Return to Nukem High, a.k.a. Volume 2. You know, it's a two-part event film, similar to in the same way that Kill Bill is two volumes. I spent 7 years on that, right? The 7 years, that's the only movie I made in 7 years. So, these people, right, they're plenty of attention to Suicide Squad, which is plenty of attention to Batman Forever, plenty of attention to whatever scum, the Weinstein, Robert Redford, Sundance, rape, red carpet worshiping culture of the so-called independent world. Right, that we don't even own the word independent anymore, right? Mm-hmm. The movies, the $12 million movie made by celebrities that get shown at Sundance, that people forget after 10 minutes. That's what it's all about. Worshiping Harvey Weinstein up on the right, he's up on the hill, and everybody's in at Sundance. They're all in awe of him, and look at the scum. Look at the world they live in. Look at the Robert Redford, Sundance, Harvey Weinstein worshiping world, right? And yet, Troma ignores us. We're ignored. Mm-hmm. We are ignored. We who've been doing this for 44 years, right? We who have a fan base that goes out there and books our movie theaters. Our fan base are the only reason we're still here, right? Right? We have a brand, yeah. Troma. Troma's a brand. I don't think people go to see a Paramount movie because Paramount's name is on it. In fact, nowadays, that's such a filthy culture that they've got, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I also was talking to some friends, Lloyd, and I apologize. I know we're running out of time, but just in closing, I know you have to run. But I was talking to some.
I can give you another 10 minutes.
Oh, cool! Awesome.
Yeah. Hayden said he just came in and said it's okay.
Oh, okay, awesome. I didn't want Hayden to break my legs or anything.
He's the best. He's nice. He loves you. Thank you. He was very thankful that you're giving me some time, too, and thank you.
Oh, you know, again. Oh, Lord, any time. Because the first time I ever met you, I remember I wanted to, like, because there's so many things I wanted to say to you. And we met on the set of Crossbearer, which is the film in Philly, and I was just covered in fake blood. And you were like, I walked up to you, I was like, hey, Lloyd, you're like, please don't get any of that blood on me. Because you were wearing a new jacket, I remember. And I was like, oh, sorry, I forgot I was covered in blood. But
thank you for preserving my jacket.
No problem. Those are the memories I cherish forever, Lloyd. The first memories. Don't touch me, kid. No, I'm just kidding. Oh. I love you. I love
well,
you.
At least I didn't touch you. See, that's what the mainstream, right? All these agents and facilitators and right? It's a cesspool. Talk about drain the swamp. Oh my God, the mainstream cartel. It's a cartel. It's a monopoly. I think it's just disgusting. And it's hundreds of millions of dollars of lobbying in Washington to get the rules against monopoly changed, and all this worshiping of conspicuous consumption. You know, they'd rather publicize a $25,000 wedding cake in the New York Post than talk about the fact that Troma just achieved its 40th anniversary.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now, back to the show.
They'd rather have a piece about Rihanna's fur coat and how one of these fashion models in $200,000 dress, skirt, wardrobe wants to have the fur coat that Rihanna has been wearing, right? Just the idea of a fur coat is obscene. But the value system, the e-entertainment value system, the whole thing is filthy, and we saw it back in the 60s. It's money. It's all the 99% of the industry. And again, I think I'm an expert. 99% and more than 99% of the people in our industry are scum of the earth. They're crooks. They're lazy. They hate movies. They're there for because they think it's easy and it's a fast. It's a easy and they and they're there for the velvet ropes that keep the real people out. They're there. They're propelled by flying. Sorry about the pun. They're propelled by flying. Business class to the Cannes Film Festival, and then bragging about how I had dinner at Machu. That's a restaurant that they it's like $800 for four people. You know, that's the world they live in. That's the world they live in, right?
Yeah.
Get young people to blow them, casting couches. And, you hear about all that stuff, and it's true. It's disgusting. It's horrible. But the worst of it is, from the point of view of art, is that we're getting a world of homogenized baby food. Yes, politically correct, I suppose, and that's good. But stuff that's going to change the world is not getting to the public.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Real art, the genuine artists, yes, there's a tiny amount. There's a tiny number. James Gunn, Eli Roth, John Voight, those people are the best people in the world, a tiny, tiny number, genuinely love the cinema. But the rest of them, they are going straight to hell. They are going to burn in hell.
One of the things that you just touched on was there's so many people you meet in this industry who call themselves producers. They make a producer's card. They pass that at networking events. And you always say, where are these movies that you're making? Where are the scripts at that you're talking about? Where is this? Where the hell is all this stuff?
That's right.
And if you start to scratch that surface a little bit, Lloyd, you start to see that it's all just a facade built on bullshit. And it's all about going somewhere and being seen. And that's what they really want. They just want to be famous. They don't want to actually put a work in. They don't love movies or anything else. They would be a storyteller. It's just about being famous. You know what I mean?
Basically, you're right. Money yeah. and power, money and hookers and mansions and drive around a Rolls Royce that you don't even own. Fucked up values. None of them knows who Nathaniel Hawthorne is.
Mm-hmm. Or even Takeshi Miike, like you just mentioned, if you mentioned somebody like that, or even Miyazaki, like they wouldn't know who those people are.
You have to dumb down your conversation with them. People, again, there's a very small number who are the greatest people in the world. Conrad Vernon, you can actually talk about movies. You don't have to dumb yourself down. Obviously, James Gunn, obviously, Trent Haga loves movies and loves to you can have a conversation without, you have to dumb yourself down for the so-called professionals, the people, yeah. the gatekeepers.
Yeah. And that's why I I'm glad to see you're still making movies, Lloyd. And, Return to Nuke 'Em High Volume 2, you actually just announced a date at the Trocadero Theater here in Philly. And you have it going to having the premiere out in Los Angeles as well as at the Beverly Hills. And I also am going to link everybody in the show notes to all of those theaters where you can buy tickets online. You can go out and.
How is it possible? how is it possible that Romeo and Juliet, written by James Gunn, that was selected by the Museum of Modern Art to be in their Shakespeare series, they only showed three Romeo and Juliet movies, one of which was Romeo and Juliet. How is it possible that movie has never been on any TV or any of the Showtimes and HBOs and blah, blah, blah? How is it possible that Return to Nukemai, 7 years of my life, which is a very well-reviewed, New York Times liked it. The critics there certainly don't do us any favors. They wrote a great review. It's never been on any cable system, nothing, totally blackballed, only because we're independent. How is that right? There's plenty of shit they put on, right? They got plenty of shit. They got some good stuff, too, HBO, Showtime, whatever. The only one that showed any of our movies in the last 20 years, the only thing, the only kind of broadcast we've been on was Robert Rodriguez's channel, El Rey. And he's a filmmaker. He's an artist, and he loves Troman. He's one of the people that really love movies.
But
you know, why is it? You know, it's a cartel. It's a monopoly. It's disgusting. And thank you, David Boudelis, for helping us promote Lemley's Fine Art Cinema March 8th and Lemley's NoHo 7plex March 9th through 13th in L.A. And I'll be there with the cast and. I think we're going to see something from James Gunn and John Voight's making a video and Trent Haga. We'll have celebrities, Troma alumni there, the cast, Catherine Cochran and other Zach Amico and some of our stars will be there. It's going to be great. We have an art show, by the way. The Hyena Gallery in Burbank has organized an art show for a month of March with all the paintings and sculptures are all inspired by Return to Nukemai and Return to Nukemai. Return to Nukemai. About 20 artists have created paintings and sculpture, all inspired by the Class of Nukemai legacy, the franchise, or whatever you want to call it. So, and then there's going to be a big party on the 9th of March at Club Cobra, which is a club next, very almost next door to the Lemley NoHo in North Hollywood. So it's going to be quite a Troma festival. And then March 1st, you go to the Trocadero. I'll be there with Catherine and some of the stars. And we're going to have a great premiere at the Trocadero in Philadelphia for Return to Nukemai, a.k.a. Volume 2. And this is all thanks to our fans. Our fans go to the theaters and tell the managers they want Lloyd's movie. And so if there are any fans there, thank you. And thank you for going. If there are fans listening now, go to your local cinema. I can very often show up.
Yeah, and I'm going to link to the show notes, everybody, where, you know, you can go to the screen. You can go to your local theater and, you know, ask for Lloyd's movie there. And then you can actually do that. So I'm going to link to all that in the show notes, Lloyd. Again, I thank you for going over the time, by the way. I know
Hold on 1 second, please. Oh, yeah, let's wrap it up. I see that something's happening here. Can you, I've run over, but thank you very much.
My pleasure, Lloyd. And again, I can't wait to have you back on again when you make Shakespeare's Shitstorm. We'll have you back on for the third time. That'll be the trifecta.
Wonderful. And come and visit Tromaville one of these days.
I am going to take you up on that. I want to come to New York.
Yeah, we'll give you a tour.
And I'm going to take you to lunch. I want to come up there and I want to take you to lunch, Lloyd.
Beautiful. Let's do it. Anytime. That's great. And you'll get a kick out of Troma visiting. We get a lot of tourists here, too. They just ring the doorbell and come visit the Troma building in beautiful Long Island City, Queens. All righty. See you soon, David. Thanks.
Take care, Lloyd.
Best wishes. Bye-bye.
You too, buddy.
Bye.
I want to thank Dave so much for doing such a great job on this episode. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/682. Thank you so much for listening, guys. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle podcast at indiefilmhustle.com. That's INDIEFILMHUSTLE.com.